Thank you very much. We'll now open for questions, and I encourage people to go to the two microphones. I see someone coming.
Thank you for the panel. I learned a lot. My name is Anna Monsa. I'm a student here at McGill. I learned a lot, and I learned a lot of acronyms like the corporations at the GFS, ISO 22000, there's the Global Cap, there's also the Codex Alimentarius on ITAO, and the World Trade Organization is involved. So I have a question about kind of the global governance of global markets that are constantly evolving. Do you think that the World Health Organization will have a role in trying to create a level playing field and try to organize all the different standards?
That's it.
No.
Okay.
I think there is a role for international harmonized standards. That, however, does not mean that all food will be consumed and traded at those standards. Okay, so I think that there is a role for international standards in establishing a vocabulary, in establishing norms in terms of systems, testing methods, etc., etc. I think that it is it's not unexpected that that the average food safety standard in Canada is higher than, say, Mozambique. So I think there's certainly that those things are income related, for example. I think that you have got a progressive role of the private sector in we use the term regulating, you may not like that one, but in regulating food safety. If you talk to those involved with establishing private standards, what they'll say is essentially they, in loose terms, take as the starting point international standards and the regulatory requirements of governments in various countries. But that basically they are picking up the slack and they are able to respond far more quickly than governments can and certainly international organisations can. At the moment, the general opinion seems to be that private standards fall outside of the WTO. And so they don't fall under the norms that government regulations, for example, have to comply with. So that was a sort of random reflection.
I'll just make a couple of really quick points on that. First of all, we do have international standards and bodies that try to harmonize these things. Codex Alimentarius does a lot of work, and 100 countries get together all the time to try to have these standards. But we don't give up sovereignty, though, so countries can either adopt them or not. Canada sends an awful lot of people to codex meetings of all kinds, usually in winter time, to southern climes, but we adopt almost none of them. There are very few codex standards that Canada's actually adopted. The most interesting one is OIE, Office International Sorti, is the International Standards Body for Animal Health. And the world's veterinarians do get together every June in Paris to establish a sort of standards like that. So there is a great deal of international standards. The big gap, of course, is a matter of implementation. You can adopt a codex standard, but that doesn't mean that you're actually implementing to it. So that's a major problem. Harmonization also, too, is a kind of funny one because the biggest trading relationship in the world in this area is actually Canada and the United States. And, of course, we talk about harmonization, but the Americans, to them, what they mean is Canada changes our standards to be the same as theirs. They have no intention whatsoever of changing the comma in their regulations to be the same as ours. So we harmonize with them when it makes our sense and don't when it doesn't, and because we do have different values, different policies. So it's don't put a lot of bank on harmonization of standards being helpful in this area. Would be my view.
No, I agree completely, and I think increasingly as we see more and more of world trade move through companies own supply channels. It's the Walmarts and Carrefours and McDonald's of the planet that are going to set. Their standards will be the harmonized standards, because anybody who wants to sell will have to meet their standards, and they can't afford to have 10 different standards applying to different parts of the world.
The other thing is that there's in food safety standard, they tend to reflect the history of the countries. You know, they have problems with certain diseases, and so that of course varies from one place to another. So that it's normal that for some countries they might be more worried about certain things and ask exporters, for example, to test about specific diseases.
Can I just come back up on one issue? Because all of these things that we're talking about, certainly the political scientists I interact with, you know, start jumping up and down. You know, because there are, of course, significant issues to do with the legitimacy of these things, processes of democracy, roles of developing countries in establishing norms and standards, etc. And I think those are very legitimate issues. However, I think we have to be careful in the, you know, that the voice of those countries, even in setting international standards, is quite muted. You know, so it isn't that, you know, Walmart is basically pushing out developing countries from international processes where they have a large voice. In many cases, they don't have that voice anyway. So.
I think we'll move on.
Thank you. My name is Aiden. I'm from Sub-Saharan Africa. I've got a question on food safety. I hear you when I talk about food safety under normal, you know, kind of trend in relationships. But what about food safety under conditions of a crisis like what we're having in the Horn of Africa, where we have to ship large quantities of food suddenly? Do you really adhere to the food safety requirements and food safety standards, or you just struggle to sell food so that people put something in their bellies? Because I do remember in my country in Sub-Saharan Africa 2 decades ago, we were hit by a very big drought, and during the recovery, we got seed from international supply, but that seed was basically sterile, non-productive. Thank you.
When I was in Uganda and Kenya earlier this year, one of the biggest complaints that producers were arguing was actually the requirements of the World Food Programme. That it's actually quite a lucrative trade supplying the World Food Programme with basic grains that go into emergency relief, and were very concerned about the requirements of the World Food Programme in sourcing commodities for that. So that's all I can say on that issue.
The one thing I would add to that is, you know, the whole world is trying to move in the direction of using cash for food aid rather than shipping commodities. In fact, I think the United States is the only country left that ships commodities as food aid. The idea is you buy it as close as possible to the destination where the need is. Your money goes a lot further, a lot less transport cost. But it basically is the standards within the region. And as Spencer says, the World Food Program does impose fairly rigid standards that at times cause them not to buy from what might be the closest source. But definitely the trend is to move to cash only food aid and not ship commodities from the countries where in the major exporting countries.
Perhaps I would just ask a question of the panel. One of the things that came up quite a bit was the added value component. And I wondered if you could comment on the relative risks, benefits, or advantages, disadvantages of looking at added value at the site of the country production as opposed to the country that where our products are being imported, particularly in the context of environment and sustainability.
Well, until you got to the last 4 or 5 words, I have said to the extent that the value is being added by countries or by companies which have valuable brands, they're not going to risk losing or eroding the value of their brand in going to lesser or lower standards. And I think in those same companies are increasingly worrying about sustainability of the production processes. So I shouldn't have been as glib as I was about the last four words. But no, it's. But I think that you're probably doing better on quality and food safety when it's the companies that have a brand that they can't afford to lose value.
Actually, some of them, they use this for marketing purposes, like Cadbury, for example. They go out of their way to say that they are paying fair prices to cocoa producers, and that they're treated well, and so they don't necessarily pass by a lot of intermediary. They try more and more to deal directly with farmers, and so it's to their economic advantage, I think so.
If you take fresh produce trade, there are obviously a lot of questions about sustainability because, in essence, you're exporting water, which is very high value from countries which, you know, certainly where water is relatively expensive and there are issues to do with supply and whatever. If you take Kenya as an example, and everyone talks about Kenya, and in some ways it is anomalous because its agriculture trade, you know, is so world class. I've never seen a facility in North America that is at the standards of the facilities around the airport in Nairobi, exporting fresh produce, semi-processed, etc. So it's a very, very high standard. But one way in which they have sort of got over some of the issues is to process more. So they're actually, the value has gone up, but the actual volumes have declined. So in that sense, you could argue, they're exporting less water.
So I think we'll I'll ask Paul to just come and make a couple of concluding comments, and then we'll take a break for lunch. So Paul, and Paul will thank our speakers too.
Thank you, Marilyn. Just a few concluding comments. The one thing that we wanted to bring out in the panel is the importance that agricultural trade or international trade is going to play a very important role in terms of supplying food and distributing food globally. And one of the things that we see is we see risk both in terms of environmental risk, but also risk in terms of food quality as being an important area where these elements collide with potentially international trade. And one of the things we have to do is work out different institutional and different mechanisms to try to deal with those sort of problems. So in conclusion, I'd like to thank our four speakers for some excellent presentations and giving us some words of to ponder over lunch as we think about the big issues that we have to deal with in terms of food security and food.